Mr. Johnson, he will be chairing this hearing, and the reason for that is, like the last hearing that he was chair for, another board member was not here, and this is a hearing that he's been assigned to. So at this time, the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson will chair your hearing at this time, sir. The Honorable Mr. Johnson.
Good morning, sir. How are you this morning? Hello?
He is not here.
Okay, good morning, sir. How are you here this morning?
Those are me, I have a name.
Okay. So you're here before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency. Could you please state your full name and your ABC number for us for the record, sir? Okay, Mr. Clark, so let me introduce you to the board members that will be conducting your hearing this afternoon, so this morning. So to my far right, you have the Honorable Mrs. Dale Rittenhouse. Coming down the line, you have the Honorable Luis Quinones. In the middle, we have the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright, who is our board chair. Sir, my name is Michael Johnson. I'm going to be acting as your panel chair this morning, okay? So you appear before the board for a early parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest this morning. Is that right, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So you're currently serving a two-life sentence for aggravated assault, dangerous and repetitive, and enhanced offense committed on release. Is that right, sir? These two consecutive sentences, they are running concurrent to each other. You became parole eligible on November 12th of 2010. Is that about right, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay, you have served several sentences for possession, four sentences for possession and sale of dangerous drugs, and one for illegal control. You for 16 new sentences, which all of those sentences have since expired. They were all running in. They were all running together with each other. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. According to your progress report, sir, you stand with your sister in the run off. If you receive SSI food stamps, you have clothing and transportation. That's right?
Yes, sir.
You haven't had any disciplinary problems since 2006. And you have taken some programming. The most recent programming that you have taken, it looks like the last one that I'm looking at right now, was in 2013 for conflict resolution. You had one in 17 for pre-orientation. Is that about right, sir?
Yes, sir.
If granted parole or home arrest, you said if I grant parole, you're going to work for an absolute discharge parole from parole, and if you granted an absolute discharge, you will live out the rest of your life camping. Is that right? Just taking it easy in life, is that right? Okay. So you have been before this board several times, and you were here in 2012, in which you were granted a home arrest, and then you came back. This happened July 30th of 2012. You was granted a home arrest. Came back to before this board in September of 2012, at which time you were continued on the home arrest. It looks like. And then in 14, you came before the board. You were still continuing on your home arrest. It looks like in August 24th of 17, it was revoked. Is that right? I'm trying to make sure I'm reading this right, sir.
Yes, sir.
So you were actually out for about 5 years, sir?
A little less than 4 years.
Okay, a little less than 4 years. And then your parole was revoked?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so why was your parole revoked?
Well, the board says Because that's part of the conflict of the coalition to the first party.
Okay. The incident that you actually in custody for is an incident that occurred back around February 21st in 1985. Sir? February 21st, 1985, and November 19th of 1985. And I'm going to ask you to kind of give us an explanation if you can remember, but this is an incident that conspired along with another companion to sell drugs to undercover agents of the Attorney General's office. You made an agreement to sell cocaine, $28,000 per kilogram for cocaine. During a reverse sting operation, he pulled a gun and turned around to our two undercover officers, and the officers fired at their weapons after you had self-defense, but apparently no one was injured or hit during that period of time. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So, Mr. Claxton, why don't you... tell the board a little bit about what occurred, what you remember about what occurred during that period of time. What was going through your mind at that time? So I think you were also on a mandatory release status when this incident occurred. Is that right?
Did you remember 1985?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Okay.
I went to college. I was a legal. my goodness, at a certain moment, my aggression, and usually it seems I was, it was a sort of a shooter move.
Just moving on to the, this race group.
Okay, so I'm assuming the board has an interest in what's the board. Seeing no additional questions coming from the board, so I do think that they're, they're supportive here for Mr. Claxton. You hear from Mr. Claxton, sir? And what is your name, sir?
David Campbell.
David, okay, sir, if you want to come up here to state your name and go ahead and present whatever information you'd like to present on behalf of, No, you have to just speak to the board.
Just me. I've known Richard for about 3 years. From what I know, he's probably one of the best guys I've ever met. I've spent hours and hours talking to him just about random things, life in general. I've seen him be a father figure. He's had absolutely zero infractions with the law that I'm aware of. This allegation that he sent somebody over to Carl and Katie's is false. It never happened. There's no proof. There's no police report. The way this got to you in the pro board is the third attorney for Katie and Carl called the probation officer directly, which should have all gone through the police department. There should have been an arrest. There's absolutely no reason for him to be back in prison. It's a false allegation, never happened, and there's no proof to it. He's also requested an evidentiary hearing with you guys. I don't know, did that happen?
Well, we do have documentation in here where he's requested some information, but sir, this board doesn't hold, you know, we hold regular parole hearings, mm-hmm. we hold revocation hearings, mm-hmm. and those are the hearings that we actually have once the decision is actually made by this board, but we don't have like a court of law, mm-hmm. where when you go to trial, you have an evidentiary hearing before you have a trial, where the man presents the evidence and go to. This is not a court of law, sir, so we don't operate under those same processes.
The amendment to the Constitution, it was the 5th and the 14th Amendments, requires that the parolee does, in fact, get an evidentiary hearing. Who does that if it's not the parole board?
Well, the parole board could have if what I'm looking at, what he's asking for in here, mm-hmm. is a evidentiary hearing, at which time, like, in a trial, we have an evidentiary hearing. Mm-hmm. People are called. Right now, the evidence that's there, you do have the only thing that you could have is a probable cause here.
Okay,
I'm not concerned, let me just respond to you. Okay, a probable cause, then we just hope we're going to actually have a probable cause here and an evidentiary here are two separate things. A probable cause here is simply where, you know, determination is made that there's probable cause to believe that something was a crime committed or a violation was committed, which would be absolutely different. So what he's requested is an evidentiary hearing, and that's something that this board does not hold. I do see where, because he actually requested an evidentiary hearing, he requested to cross-examine interview witnesses. That is something that would have occurred when he actually had his revocation hearing. So I'm just telling this too, but he's requesting this board does not do. He's requesting something that would be a process in a legal proceeding. Right? This is just a hearing that we would actually have for that. So it's a revocation hearing. That's when those things would occur. However, this here is just a parole hearing. So he's here for parole hearing, mm-hmm. which is to appeal to this board to either be his parole to be denied or revoked. So right now, that is the only thing that this board is really authorized to actually review at this time.
Okay, and you guys base your decision knowing that he's not had an evidentiary hearing?
Well, what I'm explaining to you, sir, is that this is not a court
right.
proceeding, a court of law. That is not an evidentiary hearing. It's not a process of our process. It's not a part of our process. To get, you know, if you were there,
okay.
Do you understand what I'm saying? I understand what you're asking.
I do.
I'm just trying to explain that, you know, an evidentiary hearing is not something that would occur. There's not a part of the process of this board. This board does not hold evidentiary hearings.
Okay.
Okay?
I know he's got a case with, I believe, the Superior Court currently. I don't know the status on that.
We wouldn't know that from some of the documentation that we have in there. And I did review the documentation that he had. He a decision to revoke his parole. He was revoked, he's now incarcerated. Once he gets incarcerated, he does have an opportunity to come back before this board on a parole hearing. So we're here now, you know, basically on that parole hearing. That's the process of where we have now. So
okay,
I'm hoping I'm understanding what you're doing, and I'm trying to be...
I know it's confusing, I get it. Bottom line, he's been in no trouble since he's been out. He's a great guy, like you said, a father figure to his former girlfriend's son. I don't know if he's had a speeding ticket. The guy likes to go camping and drink coffee. I mean, that's basically an entertainment. He's violent, he's not violent in any means whatsoever. And I'm a very good judge of character, and having known him for 3 years, anyway, that's pretty much all I have to say.
So can I ask you how you know Mr. Claxton?
Through his now ex-girlfriend.
Okay. And you said you know him for how long?
About 3 years.
Okay. So does the board have any questions for this? Yes, sir.
Yes, sir, Mr. Johnson, just a quick one, and I think you may have already answered it. You referred to the two people who made the allegations by first name. Do you know them?
I do.
Okay.
I know all parties involved.
I was going to say, it's not necessarily pointed, it's just that I wasn't sure where you fit into that dynamic.
Oh, I've known the family for 20 years.
Okay.
I've known the accusers. I've known her since she was two. She's now an attorney with her husband, Carl. So I've known that family for 20 years.
Okay, sir. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Any questions?
No, sir. Seeing no other support, I believe we're going to hear from Mr. Clapton. Ms. Moody, we have someone, a victim, attorney here.
Yes, I just need to put someone on the record real quick first.
Okay.
We do have a victim that is going to address the board, but I just want to put on the record real quick that Maricopa County was down as a prosecutor on this case, and they had planned to appear. In fact, they said something was on the way. When they found out that they were not the original prosecutors, the original case was conflicted to the AG, and so there was an intention of prosecution to appear, but the AG's office did not get notice, and if I have an opportunity, I will fix that for the next time, but I should not get the word that status on the record for that.
Okay. So is there anyone else?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good morning. Thank you for allowing me the chance to speak. My name is Carl Ringstrand. I am here to speak against the release of Richard Claxton. We are dealing with a career criminal who has been convicted and incarcerated in 3 states for violent crimes. While given a chance of parole, he began to stalk and harass my family. We filed an injunction against harassment in the justice courts here in Phoenix, which we properly served on Mr. Claxton. He opposed it, a hearing was held, it was upheld. He then continued to violate the injunction against harassment multiple times, culminating in the June incident, which resulted in the revocation of his parole. Phoenix Police did submit additional charges to the prosecutor's office. I have copies of that Phoenix Police report indicating many of the violations of the injunction against harassment that Mr. Claxton did upon my family, and that's new charges were submitted since he was incarcerated at the time that new charges were submitted. They have at this point declined prosecution. If I may approach and present the...
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
So if you would just do me one kind favor, give me about 2 minutes just to look at this, okay?
Yes, sir. Mr. Claxton violated the injunction against harassment, that he does not consider court orders to apply to him. We have voicemails that the police obtained that were left on protected people's phones, and then at the very bottom of page 3, the police requested that a complaint be issued. It has been near 6 months since Mr. Claxton last came before this parole board. That is simply not enough time to change his pattern of behavior. That is not enough time to abdicate the safety risk that he poses to my family. He alleged that if upon release, he would reside with his sister, who would not come here to support him, who lives in Phoenix and could easily have attended. He has agreed that he will be just taking it easy, unemployed, for the most part, or perhaps, someday later. He has provided no proof of residency upon release. He has provided no proof of employment upon release. He has provided no proof that he would be a productive member of society, or that justice would be served if he was released. If he was released, he would be a safety risk to my family, my pregnant wife, the minor child that resides with us. He was obsessed with that minor child. He confronted me at an elementary school. He confronted my wife at an elementary school. He had no business being at the elementary school. Mr. Claxton does not. He has broken every chance of changing. 6 months since the last parole hearing, he has not changed. I please ask that you deny his request for parole and that you set this out for 1 year.
Okay, so let me ask you a question, because I'm something that I'm not real clear on. I mean, I've heard that he was not, I mean, why he was revoked, he was not to have contact period. Okay, that's why he was revoked. My question is, what's the threat to the family? I mean, I haven't heard the threat. I mean, I heard that there's been contact, that he shouldn't have contacted them, but what is the threat from Mr. Claxton to you, your wife, and your family, and your children?
Yes, sir. Throughout the spring of 2017, he continuously harassed my family, culminating in June 2017, when a very scary person showed up at my house at 7 in the morning on the weekday. And said that Mr. Claxton had attempted to hire him to, quote, do something.
You're changing your story, Carl.
Wait, sir, listen. Everyone get an opportunity to talk.
I have,
if you want to allow and be courteous and allow those to speak, then we're going to have to ask you to leave, okay? All right, thank you.
That third party showed up at my house and said that Mr. Claxton had attempted to hire him to do something involving the judicial proceeding that was to take place the next day in order to inhibit my appearance there.
So, I'm just really just trying to, because I'm trying to understand what is the actual threat and to inhibit your appearance. So is it threat over a custody hearing, or what is it? I'm trying to, if you could just help me understand, sir.
Custody matters are now closed. I do not consider this a custody issue. I see this as a safety issue with a career criminal who does not abide by court orders, who is upon release, will continue his obsession with the minor child that I am the guardian of, and will continue.
So why does he have an obsession with this child? What is the connection with that child, between Mr. Claxton and that child?
His girlfriend at that time, I'm not sure if they're still together. It was her youngest child, my wife's brother.
Okay.
Maricopa County Superior Court Family Division found that the mother was unable to parent and place guardianship in order, and my wife and my estate. My wife was unable to attend today due to her pregnancy that she has right now. denied in all of the distress of it.
So this, I'm just trying to understand, so I can understand. So there's a minor child that belongs to Mr. Claxton, that used to belong to Mr. Claxton's ex-girlfriend, is that right?
That's correct.
Okay, and now that minor child, court has given you and your mom custody of the town?
Yes, sir.
Okay, that's, and so the threat is that Mr. Claxton is still trying to obtain custody, or is he threatening to do harm, or what is it that he's threatening?
I believe that he would go outside the law. I believe that he would harm my family in an attempt to kidnap the child. I do not see him as
hold on. This is the last time, because you know, I think you just walked in and you had an opportunity to talk. This is the last time.
That was me, I'm sorry.
Okay, all right, so last time I'm going to allow you to go and you can make an interruption. Someone is speaking to me. We're not allowed someone to interrupt you while you're speaking either, okay? All right, sir.
I do not believe that he has changed in the last 6 months. I do not believe that is enough time for this relationship to have dissipated.
Okay.
I beg this board to continue his incarceration and set out for 1 year.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Board, have any questions? All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Okay. For someone who just, did you just? Did someone just walk in this?
I did.
Did you sign in on this thing?
I did.
Okay. What was your name?
Laura Ann Campus. I'm Carl Engstrand's mother-in-law. I am Richard Claxton's fiance. I am George Claxton's mother.
Okay, I just didn't see when he signed in. But please come up here and state your name and then present whatever information you'd like to present to the board.
My name is Laura Ann Campus. I'm Richard Claxton's fiance. We've been together for 4 years. I am Carl Engstrand's mother-in-law.
Just speak to the board. Speak to the board.
Carl Engstrand's mother-in-law. I am Caitlin Cadmus's mother, his wife.
You are his wife's mother?
I am Carl's wife's mother. I am George's mother.
Okay.
I have four children. George Cadmus, Jack Cadmus, Sabrina Cadmus, and Caitlin Cadmus. Caitlin Cadmus is married to Carl Engstrand. Richard and I have been together for almost 4 years. My ex-husband, we were divorced, abandoned the children. He has not had anything to do with it.
Okay.
Richard stepped in when we started dating, and he took over the fatherly role.
So how long ago was that then?
That was a year after he was released on the parole.
Okay.
I was here at the...
You were here, yes, ma'am.
I was here at his absent discharge hearing.
Yes, ma'am.
That was true. Carl and Caitlin do not have custody of my son. This is an ongoing custody of love. They have temporary guardianship of my son, and that is it.
Okay.
They have not been deemed unfit. Richard has not been deemed unfit. If you look at the warrant that they have to pick up Richard, it is a technical violation that says, if we go to that, I can read
it. Are you referring to the warrant?
The 12A.
The warrant where he was revoked on?
Yes, I am. Yes,
okay. Yes, we have it. It was a technical violation.
The warrant, in the warrant, it says nothing about him threatening. It says, I didn't have a sworn statement from Carl Engstrand about what he thinks. A sworn statement from DMC, from the parole officer, that Carl explains, my name is Carl Engstrand, and he goes into how he's married to Caitlin Cadmus, the eldest sister of George Cadmus. We currently have custody of George Cadmus. He has temporary custody through when he was the case. He goes on to talk more about the case. He says, this morning, at approximately 7:10 a.m., the doorbell rang and engaged in an intercom to see who it was. He said, his home. This wasn't Richard.
So I'm going to interrupt you. I'm going to interrupt you just real quick. Because
thank you, sir.
This
revocation hearing was held the same day as the Jake Wyman hearing. And the Jake Wyman hearing went until almost 4:30. Richard had no chance to cross-examine Carl. We had no chance to cross-examine any of our witnesses. That day was a long day. Richard was supposed to be heard at noon. I'm not trying to be disrespectful to the board.
Okay.
But I'm trying to, please, let me get out what he has to say today. Because Carl is lying. And there is no way that I have proof. I have police reports. I have his own testimony that has changed 3 or 4 times. I have got the violation from Daniel Carter. The only violation Richard violated was 12F. He demonstrated 12F. If you want to look that up, it was a technical violation. It has nothing to do with threatening Carl, threatening Katie, threatening anyone in that house. Richard never threatened Katie, Carl, my son, or anyone in that house, ever. Daniel Carter got a lot to explain herself, which I don't know if she's away, so I'm not going to speak with her. But if you please let me finish about Carl's statements on page 4 or 2.
Okay, go ahead.
That morning, approximately 7:10 a.m., my doorbell rang. I engaged in an intercom to see who it was. The person announced himself as Jay, and he said he needed to talk to me about Laura and Richard. I opened the door and spoke to him through the security gate. The gate is clearly visible, and I can positively identify his face and body. I have photos that my ex-husband sent to me of their security camera of that day. Whoever this person is, it's not this Jay person that he believes. I've never seen this man in my life, and I'll show them to the court right now. I'll show them the call and ask them if you can identify them. Jay said, Laura and Richard are planning to sabotage our trial scheduled for tomorrow. This was less than 24 hours before my first custody hearing.
Right.
Okay? So, conveniently how this comes out 24 hours. Jay said, Laura and Richard are planning to sabotage our trial scheduled for tomorrow and attempted to get him to do something to sabotage the court. They did not want to be involved. I asked him, this is Carl, I asked him what they wanted him to do. He would not say specifically, but said he knew George was the boys' girls' clubs, the boys' girls' clubs, club after the day, at the end of the day, while they were at work, after school. He said they said we're planning on sabotaging, I don't know who he is, he said they are planning on sabotaging tomorrow's court date, quote, something will probably go down today. Now, when you can ask everybody, we were working on this case that day. We were working on this case that night.
Right.
Okay, go ahead. I again asked him what they wanted him to do, what they wanted him to do. He refused to answer. I asked him how he knew where he lived. He said Laura and Richard told him. They had just moved. It took my son to move, okay? We didn't tell anybody where he lived. I again asked, this is the fourth time, we again asked him what he planned to do, and then he walked away. As he was leaving, he opened the gate to identify the car. However, the man was on foot, walking down the street. There was no car to be seen. As I had security footage of him arriving at the party, I have that security footage. I know what Jay he's talking about. This is not Jay. This is some random person. I'm not being sure what you
mean. Okay, because we're here for a program here.
Right.
To get whether we can throw him. That information that you're talking about now.
So for you, but when you violated on him on the 12F.
Right.
What Paul is talking about is not a 512F violation.
I understand that. I was trying to understand what the exact threat was. He was violated, and even in the police report, it was order of protection. You want to allow me to finish.
Okay, go ahead.
And the police report doesn't in the list that there was a threat as much as that there was a violation of court order to not have any contact. The revocation was not because of the threat, but it was because of having contact. Because according to the
Richard had no interest.
Okay, no contact, so that's why he was revoked. So that's why I was trying to get an understanding of what the threat was exactly on there. And still, you know, and I do understand what he was violated on was not a threat. The violation was for having contact.
Carl Ingram says in his own, in his first statement, I have two other statements that totally are different than this. That go to totally different items. In fact, Danny Carter, who was Richard's parole officer, when she came to the house to arrest Richard with five other police officers, told me and told David that this happened the night before at 11 o'clock. So I went to the police station to get this 11 o'clock report. This didn't happen that morning, this is what she told me. It happened at 11 o'clock that night. I went down there to get the police report. They didn't have one. But, oh, they had one for that morning. They got four phone calls.
So is there something, because we're going back to the revocation here. 12 hours, he was violated for 12 hours. 12 hours says that he was not having any contact with Carl Ingram. This includes phone calls, text messages, voicemail, emails, picture mail, social media, or through a third party. I understand failure to comply. Maybe he's returning to custody.
And Richard did not violate.
Okay, so that was a decision that was made by the board. I do understand that. But right now, he is here for parole hearing to whether we're going to grant him parole or deny him parole again. So do you want to speak to something relating to what we're here for?
Yes, I will talk about his parole.
Okay.
Since I met Richard through his cousin, who I've known for many, many years.
Okay.
And I loved dearly. When I met Richard, I fell in love with him immediately.
Okay.
Okay, my father's an attorney. My brother is an attorney. I don't fall in love with ex-convicts easily. But this man is a good man. He spent most of his life in prison, and he came out one heck of a guy.
Okay.
He became George's father. He became my boyfriend. He became everything to me. And everything George, he took George to Boy Scouts, he took George to Hamming, he took George to school. He was everything to us. Everything. We were a family. Katie, Carl, Richard, we had Thanksgiving together, Easter together. For 4 years, we had every holiday together. Caitlin's Benny, we too remember him. We didn't live together. This whole time we lived together. He had his own father, I had mom. Richard, he went to college. He got a job. He was doing great. Everything was going. The only crime Richard committed was that he fell in love with a woman that happened to have a child. That was my child. They loved him very much. And the whole family loved him until the family turned on me. This has nothing to do with Richard. The family, my daughter, turned on me. She's a very sick young woman, and so is my son-in-law. He's lying. He's a liar. Everything he said at every single hearing, he is lying. Now I have a case of what in the Supreme Court, I have a case in the Superior Court, and this will go on and on and on until I make sure that everybody knows that he is lying. Yes, everything he said up here is an absolute lie. Richard is a model citizen. He never had a positive drug test. He never hurt anybody. He's look at his since without the 3.5 years until this happened. Nothing. He was a model citizen.
Okay. So
college. I did jobs, working. He took care of us. We took care of him. He was welcomed into our family. The family turned against me. My daughter and my son-in-law turned against me. And he paid the price for it. And it's not fair. He didn't do anything. He did not go to Carl's house. He did not threaten. Richard is now 70. When this supposedly happened, he was 69 years old. No 69-year-old man is going to go to a gated community, go through a gated community, and go up to the front door. This is what Daniel Carter told me. No, Daniel Carter has a totally different story than what Carl says.
Okay, I do understand that. Let me ask you one more question.
Yes. He has a place to live. He has a job. He has everything he needs. He has me.
So would he stay with you?
Absolutely.
Okay. So, this custody hearing, because this apparently this is something way out of our jurisdiction, or this authority of this board right here.
That little boy.
But
let me say something about my little boy. My little boy, he was 15. He was born with vertical, he was born with cystitis.
Okay.
He's legally blind. The fact that he's even a boy scout, the fact that he has gotten as far as he's been, participated in every parent-teacher conference, he's been to every science fair,
she was involved with my son, Dana. Richard was married a long time ago before his life turned to hell. And both of his children were killed in a car accident. Every single bit of blood that he had, those children, his wife, and the car accident, he turned on my son. My son wasn't, he was calling me dad.
Okay, so.
So, Richard, you know,
hold up, let me ask you one more question. When you say that they have temporary custody, when does the, when do, you know, are you still going to court for custody?
Oh, yes, we are.
And so that's still the point?
We had a court date in February, we had a court date which has been postponed to February, March, and March, and this morning I now just heard it's been postponed to April.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's killing, I haven't seen my son or talked to my son in 14 months. Not one word. Because of that woman and my daughter.
Well,
no, and I think
you know that. I understand, and I'm really trying to be.
Yeah, you know, I don't want you to sympathize with me.
I'm not trying to sympathize with either side. I'm just trying to make sure we have to understand.
I'm getting Richard to come home because I need a fighting chance to get my son back.
Okay.
Richard needs to be home with me.
Do you understand that if Richard was paroled, that Richard is to have no contact with him, period? No.
Absolutely.
No phone contact, no third party contact, no contact with you.
Sir, I am not allowed contact with my son. I am not allowed third party contact. I'm not allowed any of that. So both of us be in the same boat with the people. Great lawyer to help us both.
Okay, I'm just trying to make sure
I have my son for 2 months. I am not allowed contact with him. I'm allowed to get married. I sent him before he was in school. It got police confiscated. It was an insurance package.
Okay.
So I need Richard out of prison because I want him to tell us that our family put back together. I need him. And not just with the Jordan up, but I have got three. I've got Caitlin, his wife, that's Caitlin. My daughter Sabrina, she's in college. Jack, just graduated from college, he's United States Marine now. I'm about to heal my entire family. I'm the major guard of this family. I've got a lot of healing to do. And if this keeps going on, and they keep continuing without listening to love and not in my charge, why? I've got two grandchildren with me, I'm twin girls. I have no way to do it. I can't do it without Richard's getting out.
Okay, all right, well.
And he is a great man, he's a wonderful man. His sister couldn't be here with his friends.
Okay, all right.
And she would have been here, she could have.
Okay, well, thank you. I'm going to see if the board has any questions for you. Say no questions coming from the board. Mr. Claxton.
At 70 years old, Mr. Claxton is a no threat to anyone.
Okay, all right. Okay. You can go ahead and have a seat and run out of breath over Mr. Claxton at this time. Mr. Claxton, sir, the board's coming up on the conclusion of your hearing, sir. As the board comes up on the conclusion of your hearing, I want to see if there's anything else you want to say to the board without repeating yourself, sir.
Just so you know, I'm really the right one of that. I'm just waiting to hear the last. I'm understanding. You know, my understanding is that I'm not studying, I'm repeating myself.
Okay. All right, Mr. Claxton, so the board's going to go into discussion. My board's in discussion, Mr. Claxton. I'm going to ask you to remain on the phone. However, to ask you to remain silent while the board's in discussion. So we're waiting to hear the discussion taking place between the board. However, the board will make a decision at this time whether to revoke or reinstate you under community supervision. When we have made a decision, sir, we'll get back with you, talk to you about that decision, and then that will conclude your hearing at that time, okay?
Okay.
For the board to discuss with Mr. Carlson again, please stay on the line. I will be leave you to remain silent while the board is in discussion. We're in a discussion now. This is, I think this is a more of a civil situation that's going on between the family that this board has no authority over. To do it, I do. Mr. Claxton was violated for having contact with the victims in this case, and he was violated. However, there was no threat of violence that was actually committed. There was just some allegations that actually have been made. There was a phone conversation that took place according to this documentation from the police department that we just got, that there was two messages that were left, and told them to call the mother, and came the email with the first message and attached them to the call, that there is a violation according to the police report that we have. It's DR number 20170100346 is the incident number for the report for the Phoenix Police Department. And it states in summary of our jury report, the elements of the charges of failure to comply with the court order present pursuant to the request that a complaint be issued. So if I say that there was a violation of court order, which is the same thing, a violation of his revocation, but I can tell you, I just don't see a clear indication of a threat. Physical harm being brought up on someone, there is some communication issues, honor protection that's being issued, but I'm not hearing a clear indication of a threat actually being made to cause any physical harm or a threat that some physical harm is going to actually occur. And I am not under the opinion that Mr. Claxton is a physical threat to the victims. However, there is a hard custody here that seems to be going on between the family. And there's some type of a breakup or a break between the mother and her children that is actually going on. And Mr. Claxton is probably caught up in the middle, and Mr. Claxton has said that he do understand that he said no contact whatsoever, third party, fourth party contact, which is stated against this parole hearing. So I would like to just tell you at this point in time, I'm not really seeing, based on the information and what I'm hearing, a serious, I don't want to say a serious threat. A threat is a threat, a type of threat to the victims. I'm not sure when this custody hearing is going to be over with, but until this custody hearing is going to be over with, it appears that there's going to be this continual disruption in this family structure. But I'd like to hear from the rest of the board and my colleagues.
Sir, you want to go?
No, I think we both.
I'm just. I don't know. My concern is that with all the wrangling going on, will it be possible for Mr. Claxton to follow the law necessarily, but he's obviously emotionally involved in this. Would it be possible for him to stay detached? And I don't know. I don't know how to express it. My concern that he'd be involved in that.
Yes. Pardon me. What I have to add is probably not going to make the discussion any easier. I hear what my colleague is saying, and I can empathize. What I'm thinking is that there's a lot of emotion going on in this hearing that is related to the revocation, it's related to a custody hearing, a referral parole hearing, and I have to detach myself from all that emotion and consider whether or not we can safely return Mr. Claxton back to the community. And this is where I will say the dialogue, the pendulum will swing back, and that is, I'm not quite seeing the threat, so to speak. I am concerned about the amount of emotion attached to this, but that's, you know, we're not here to try a case and there's not a crime against emotion. I just, I want to make sure that whatever decision I make as an independent board member, that it's in the interest of public safety, and no, you know, indication of a possible ongoing threat. And I'll just continue the discussion from there.
Okay. I'm at the same place. This is a very difficult situation. I'm going to say that I don't feel as though there's an adversarial indication of a physical threat. Mr. Claxton as the physical threat. However, I do feel as though, because of what you're talking about, the emotion that's going on, that Mr. Claxton, if he was put on home arrest, he would just be right back before this board again because of the emotional distress that's relating to this situation, that he's not having contact with Carly and Stan, which includes the phone calls, text messages, voicemail, email, pictures, social media, through any point. But, you know, they're going through a tough custody, and I do want to commend Mr. Claxton for taking the time and opportunity to get involved with the child and the time that he spent. So I understand that he has the emotional attachment, but I'm just not sure that there's a way to put him on arrest and not put him in a situation to violate the conditions of his release. That's kind of a concern that I have. But I do want to say I don't feel as though he's a physical threat to anyone. Dr. Raju, can I have a final word before I make this motion?
It's not been a final word, but I will make a comment, sir. I think that we as myself, as a board member, we have to make a decision, as some of you said, based upon all of the facts that's been presented to this board. We're not going to go back and redo what we did 6 months ago. As you may recall, 6 months ago, he was found in violation of terms and conditions of his supervision at that time. That was a different hearing. Today we're here for a parole hearing, which is completely different than the revocation hearing that we held about six months ago. And I think that, in my opinion, is that, yes, this is a domestic issue involving family members, both sides of the family, in the room at this particular moment. I feel that at this time, and Mr. Claxton is not showing all that emotion. The emotion is coming from other sources. And I think it would be in the best interest at this time for this board, as my role, not speaking for the board, is to deny John Burrell home arrest and absolute discharge.
Okay, I'm going to say that I'm in agreement. I do understand there are some conditions of his supervision that he refused to place on home arrest in the county. He's not having contact with George Cabina, Caitlin Cabina, or Paul Anderson. And I just don't see how that would happen based on the emotional distress that's going on in the with the family at this time. I'm going to say that I would hope that for the benefit of the family as well as the benefit of Mr. Claxton, that somehow that they can get this family matter and ironed out and come to some practical conclusion. However, that is not within the peripheral vision of this board to be involved in anything like that. So based on the information, the testimony that we've actually had here, I do think that releasing Mr. Claxton on parole is only going to set him up that he'll be coming back here again before this board for a revocation here, not for threats, but just for having contact, which is why you revoked in the first place. And Dr. Raju, after you wrote this parole here, we had a revocation here, and we've already gone through it. So, Mr. Kanyanis.
Yeah, just to follow up on that, because for me, trying to center back on the parole here, I think the language is there's substantial concern that he cannot abide by the conditions under these circumstances.
Correct.
The conditions,
that's the word. Therefore, I'm going to make a motion to deny on arrest, random parole, absolute discharge to Mr. Claxton at this time. That is going to be my motion.
I'll second.
Agreed.
I am not going to ask for a money fix that up, though.
Thank you.
And I want to mark, the reasons for, denial we're going to, and I just want to make clear that these reasons for denial are not related to the ongoing domestic violence situation. The reason for denial are only based on the actual crime that he was actually incarcerated for. I just want to make that clear. That is a serious and violent offense. John Mark Trump, two victims, officers were, there were more than two officers, so there was multiple victims related to that. Violated previous probation of parole, prior criminal history, is a repeat offender. So I'm not going to mark any of the other, I do think he does have a release plan. He has good demeanor during the hearing. There was a letter in here from a relative, so I do think he has family and community support. So those are going to be my reasons for the denial, unless the board sees some other things that may be included in there. Okay, that is going to be Mr. Glassman. So we're going to deny your parole at this time. We did not ask for one year set off. We will be able to come back before this board in about 6 months therefore, based on the Department of Correction. They will determine whether this board, you know, when you will come back before this board in about 6 months, sir. The reason, did you hear the reasons for your denial, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay, sir. Mr. Glassman, I do want to thank you, sir, for taking the time and opportunity for participating in your hearing today. I do want to thank all those who are present and took the time and opportunity to participate in the hearing today. Although I know it's very personal, very emotional to all those involved, but that is going to conclude the hearing at this time. Thank you.
Okay, the hearing is over. The board is in recess for lunch for 1 hour. We'll be back at 1 o'clock, and Mr. West.